Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. We don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to be back. I'm sorry I missed you last week. I had to work on my day job. Had to do a trade show. Over at Real Science Radio, Fred and I just interviewed Dr. Robert Malone about his book, PsyWar, all about psychological warfare and psychological operations, which is what a trade show is. Trade shows filled with nefarious, precarious psychological operations, not quite psychological warfare, psychological manipulation. And so I went and suffered a weekend of that because we got to eat around here. And so anyway, I'll have some more on that. But I want to start in the formerly Great Britain from the widespread tyranny file. The United Kingdom government has committed itself to forcing cattle to consume anti-flatulence feed additives. Yeah. The drug is called Bovaer, and it's an anti-methane additive used in cattle feed, at which point you think, is that from another planet? How does that happen? How has anyone been working on an anti-flatulence? It's because of the hysterics in the climate religion to which most of the governing officials of the Western world belong. They're high priests. And so now the United Kingdom government, now that they've created an anti-methane drug to put in the cattle feed, now they want to mandate that all suitable British cattle will be given methane-reducing drugs by 2030. They have an obsession with 2030 for some reason. I'm not sure what that's all about. But the communists are obsessed with getting everything done by 2030. So what does that mean, all suitable British cattle? That means anyone raising British cattle who can't pay off the climate cult, then your cattle will be suitable to eat. Or any cattle that the climate cultists don't plan to eat themselves will be considered suitable and will ingest the anti-methane drug Bovaer. Let's see here. This is all according to the Department for Environment, Food, and Rural Affairs. So right there, if you have one of those, you're in deep trouble. What? We have a Department for Environment, Food, and Rural Affairs? Rural affairs, they take care of themselves. They're out in the country. That's the definition of not needing a bureaucracy, is rural affairs. But they have a bureaucracy to regulate that in England. Hence, the Muslims will take over and cut everyone's head off within a generation. It's very sad to see. Yes, the mandate's coming out for methane-suppressing feed products. You know you're too wealthy, affluent, and stupid, and you should have your keys taken away when you're producing methane-suppressing feed products. British citizens are furious, and they vowed to boycott any makers of dairy if they contaminate the dairy with this additive, which nobody knows what this will do long-term. It might kill the cows. It might kill the people who drink the milk or the people who eat the cows. But it's all part of the religion, and killing people is part of it, too. So they're okay with that. Let's see. I have more from the Food Standards Agency. See, that's you don't have one of those in a free country, Food Standards Agency. You know what the Food Standards Agency should be? It should be the criminal code. If you put out food that makes people sick and kills them, you're going to go to jail. And if you're convicted, you're going to be punished. You're going to go to jail. You're going to be put on trial. And that'll stop people from, people will do right by the food if they're afraid of going to jail. Or You can preach the gospel and people actually love each other and won't want to hurt each other. That's another option. The Food Standards Agency, bad idea. Not going to work. The Muslims will come and cut off everyone's head within about a generation. So how do we know that? Well, the Food Standards Agency has concluded that there are no safety concerns, even though they don't know anything about it. Just, yeah, they say it does not cause cancer. It's not carcinogenic or genotoxic and poses no safety concerns. And we believe that. Why? Oh, because we're the Food Standards Agency. Didn't you know? All right. Well, there you go. Well, don't think that America is much better than England. Here I have a story from the Washington Examiner from the widespread file. The House of Representatives, that the legislative branch of the federal government, just passed a bill to prevent the Energy Department from further regulating washing machines. That's right. And the brave Republicans passed the, what did they call this thing? This is hilarious. The Liberty in Laundry Act is actually what they called this. These are adults. So they passed a bill preventing the Energy Department from passing any new regulations not cost-effective or technologically feasible. That's right. The brave Republicans say the Energy Department cannot pass or enforce new regulations unless they are cost-effective and technologically feasible. At which point you're saying, what? What do you mean, unless? There should be no unless. The federal government shouldn't be regulating washing machines. That's insanity. Yeah, representatives voted to pass the Liberty and Laundry Act, preventing the Department of Energy from implementing and enforcing standards for washing machines. That's where they should stop. You're not allowed to implement, or don't even think about rules about washing machines at the Energy Department. Think about finding uranium or, preventing nuclear meltdowns. I suppose there's some room for that. But don't even think about washing machines, and you certainly don't implement and don't even think about enforcing any rules. But the Republicans don't stop there. They say rules that are not cost effective or technologically feasible, meaning the brave Republicans have bought into the climate cult as well. Why? Because enough of their constituents are stupid enough to vote based on that. Want to be green. I'm conservative, but I want to be green, of course. I love Mother Earth. It's just really weird. It's really weird that people, I'm shocked to know that the Department of Energy regulates washing machines. And they've probably been regulating washing machines for my entire life. And I thought I was free. It's all been an illusion. Now, why did the brave Republicans bring this Liberty and Laundry Act to the floor for a vote? Well, it's because the Department of Energy was busy finalizing updated standards for residential clothes washers and dryers. And then the reporters at the Washington Examiner actually say this. They say the new standards are aimed at cutting energy costs and pollution. And I'm asking, well, really? Washington Examiner reporters who graduated from journalism school? How do you know the new standards are aimed at cutting energy costs and pollution? Oh, well, that's what the Department of Energy told us. Okay. Well, you don't think they might be lying to you to line the pockets of themselves and their friends by keeping small startups out of business, by making it too difficult to comply with regulations? It has nothing to do with cutting energy costs and pollution, you morons. You're supposed to be, the journalists are supposed to be keeping their eyes on the criminals looking to use the government against us, but they don't. The Washington Examiner. Go examine. I don't know what you're qualified to examine. Examine your own belly button is about all. Yikes. All right. Meanwhile, we continue in the widespread file where the Environmental Protection Agency, which you got to stop right there, and you're like, what do you mean Environmental Protection Agency? What is that? Yeah, that's it. It's like an insurance company, or mafia protection money. Oh, we hate to see something bad happen with the environment. Please, let's employ 400,000 people so that nothing bad happens to you people. All right. The EPA has announced the first ever criminal charges for a crime against the climate. That's right. Michael Hart of San Diego was convicted last September of illegally bringing forbidden greenhouse gases into the United States. Was it flatulence, you ask? That's the first question I asked. They've got him in jail and they're making him eat flatulence-suppressing diet. It wasn't flatulence, though, with this fella. Much more nefarious. Hart sold hydrofluorocarbons and hydrochlorofluorocarbons online. That's right. He went, it's the old R14 refrigerant.
Oh.
Not R14. What's it called? I can't even remember what it's called. They banned it so long ago.
Freon.
Back when refrigerators used to last 50 years. When they pumped Freon through there. So, and then whatever was in your hairspray that was destroying the ozone layer, which was all a complete fabrication and a hysterical lie by communists back in the 70s. Remember the ozone hole? We now know that the ozone hole comes and goes and comes and goes, and you could spray your hair to the sky. You could keep your house at 52 degrees all year long, and it wouldn't matter. The ozone hole comes and goes. But the government managed to ban hydrofluorocarbons, and then for good measure, hydrochlorofluorocarbons. And remember, this guy wasn't just smuggling in hydrofluorocarbons, but also hydrochlorofluorocarbons, making him especially bad. He would purchase the refrigerants in Mexico, where the gases are still legal. By the way, they were legal here for like 100 years, while America built the greatest industrial civilization in the modern history of mankind. They were legal. America built a civilization with air conditioning. America built a civilization on air conditioning. And then we got so rich and fat and stupid that we banned the gases upon which we built the civilization. But they're still legal in countries who are too poor to pretend that the world is their own technological playground and that it was created just for them so they could virtue signal to each other. In Mexico, virtue signaling is not a legitimate livelihood, so they still have Freon down there. And Mr. Hart would go down there and he would purchase the refrigerants and then he smuggled them across the border concealed in his vehicle. Shocking. That's right. He hid the cans of Freon in his car. Anyway, the maximum penalty for Mr. Hart, 5 years and $250,000.
Wow.
Start a GoFundMe. Free Michael Hart. He was smuggling in. So, you know, because some people, because the old refrigerators and the old air conditioning units, they never break. And so people have these old units and they need the refrigerants. But they can't get them because of the communists. And so Michael Hart, he is fulfilling a need in the marketplace and he's not a criminal.
But maybe he is.
Maybe he is a criminal?
I mean, that.
He could be a criminal. I guess he is. For
somebody hired him to do that, maybe.
Maybe. I have a feeling that he probably has a refrigerator from 1970.
Oh.
And that's how it all started. And then he found out there's a bunch of other guys.
Yeah.
A bunch of old ladies. They all got these refrigerators. And they don't want to throw them out and buy these new junky ones that bust in 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, I don't want that. I want my refrigerator that my grandma gave me that's been keeping my food cold for 50 years. Can you get me some Freon, man? I can get it, but I gotta smuggle it across the border. So anyway, when they outlaw refrigerants, only refrigerators will be outlaws. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. We don't have time. We don't have time to play around. Thank you. Thank you for for bumping us back in, boys. That's right. Now we go to Bloomberg.
Oh, no, not this.
Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg. I just found this out. I was not aware of this. Michael Bloomberg, Bloomberg News, by the way. He started Bloomberg News as a business news service so that people buying and selling stocks could get news ahead of other people and buy the stocks and make money. It was a genius, brilliant idea. If it was even his, he probably stole it from someone else. So I shouldn't say that. I have no evidence of that, except that he's a creep. And that everyone who manages to be atop a pile of billions of dollars seems to do that a lot. Bill Gates being the template and one of the worst offenders. But anyway, Michael Bloomberg, who founded Bloomberg News and became a billionaire, he said in an interview in 2014, back when he was 72 years old.
Oh, young.
He was just a kid back then. So, anyway, he was asked about all the efforts he's made in anti-obesity, anti-smoking. He had just banned soda pop in New York, and he was in the fight of his life. He was trying to ban soda pop. Other people didn't want soda pop banned, and there was a big battle in the courts. And Michael Bloomberg was the mayor of New York City. And he did an interview in 2014, and he said the following: if there is a God, I've earned my place in heaven. It's not even close. Unquote. Michael Bloomberg, 2014, at the age of 72. He just turned 82. And as far as we can tell, his attitude has not changed. And that's going to be difficult for Mr. Bloomberg when he... he said if there is a God. Well, when he finds out that there is, first thing he's going to find out is God had a problem with that question right there, or that statement. God's not going to be happy about that one, if there is a God. Okay, there is now. Here I am. Okay. And then the whole, I've earned my place in heaven, it's not even close. Man, that is not going to go over well for Mike. Anyway, we hope Mike gets exactly what he deserves and that he repents and receives eternal life. That's what we hope for Michael Bloomberg. Meanwhile, let's go to Bloomberg News, where they may have this big splash headline, Disease X. Disease X evokes fears of another pandemic. This is from the Trump Effect file. It's from December 10th, before I went out to the psychological manipulation and warfare operation there called a trade show. From December 10th, an outbreak dubbed Disease X in the Congo has sparked concern about another global pandemic now that Donald Trump has won the election. Oh, I added that last part. So it has nothing to do with Donald Trump winning the election. It has everything to do with Disease X out of the Congo, which is scary, right? The Congo. Is there anybody there to stop it? No, it's the Congo. Anyway, the World Health Organization announces that testing is underway in the Congo. Remember last time we did testing?
In Congo.
Uh-huh. Well, last time it was in Wuhan, I think, is where they started with the testing. And then it was test, 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 test. And then it was a bunch of communists taking down America. Anyway, I'm not saying, okay. The outbreak was first detected in October when internal polling showed that Donald Trump was likely to win the election. Okay. Meanwhile, last Wednesday, now that was December 10th back 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago. Last Wednesday, California governor and MAID member of the mafia, Gavin Newsom, declared a state of emergency over the bird flu, not related to Disease X, but who's counting? So that's right. Newsom wrote in his declaration of a state of emergency, quote, all residents are to obey. And then he went on to talk about what we're supposed to obey and why and how it's all for our own good, safety and all that. But mainly he said, all residents are to obey. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so color me skeptical that Donald Trump is allowed to accede to power in a peaceful transition. Just color me skeptical. Without some sort of catastrophic something happening. I don't know. If I'm Donald Trump, I am not going to take the oath of office in Washington, D.C. Uh-uh. Nope. I want to be at Mar-a-Lago with my own private security. That's just my advice to Don, okay? Meanwhile, Elon Musk, a modern day version of Rasputin, he's pitching semaglutide, GLP-1 drugs to treat obesity. This is from the Muskrat file. What does Elon Musk know about semaglutide or obesity? He knows nothing at all about anything at all, about anything to do with any of that. But he thinks that the government should start manufacturing these drugs and giving them to fat people so that they won't be obese. And Elon Musk isn't a doctor. He's not even a medicine doctor. He's not even a witch doctor. He's just a terminal adolescent on ketamine. So, I mean, he does know something about drugs. Certainly does. He's a terminal adolescent on ketamine whose forefathers built him the equivalent of a giant playground in real life. It's not like Mexico. He literally has a giant playground and the technology that enables him to live a fantasy life in his giant playground that his grandparents built for him. Elon Musk is a guy who would have died face down on the prairies of Kansas heading west 150 years ago. Right? But because of the civilization his parents and grandparents built and handed to him, he's considered some kind of genius because he can hire smart people. He can utilize technology to make billions of dollars and bamboozle the government out of billions of more. And he can apply technology effectively, and hence he's a genius who's supposed to save America. And what does he say? He says, let's give fat people Ozempic, even though we don't know what it'll do to them. Here we have a quote from the genius. And it's a quote from X, which means they leave out a lot of words. It's not like English anymore. It's almost like AI robot language, which I think is what, I think that's what Elon Musk speaks because of the drug-addled brain. He says, vast majority of healthcare spending is near end of life and obesity often plays a major role. Musk said in a July post on X, a letter that he's, for some reason, he's obsessed with it. I hope it means he's obsessed with reasserting masculinity. And the X, no, wait, the masculine chromosome is the Y chromosome, is it not? Too big, like a quiz, drop a quiz on my extremely attractive audio engineer. It is, I think it's the Y chromosome. We'll have to have our crack staff look that up. But I'm pretty sure X is the female, XX is female, XY is male, and so I don't know. What is his obsession with X? Let's leave that aside because it's creepy and weird. He's kind of creepy and weird. He talks about obesity later in life costing a lot of money. Healthcare spending is his concern because he doesn't love people. He loves money. GLP and other hunger inhibitors might be the single biggest positive effect on healthcare and quality of life in the 21st century. So Elon Musk is a guy who thinks a drug is going to come along and it's going to be the biggest positive effect. Why? Because it was taking speed and staying up for 3-4 days at a time that made him rich. And so he naturally thinks, hey, if there's problems with people, let's find a drug. And he's the genius who's going to save America alongside Donald Trump. He's Donald Trump's Rasputin. This is from the Muskrat file. Yeah, XY. I thought so. Male.
XY is a male.
Yes. X is, Y is the male. I has our crack staff all over it. Look at that. Very good. That's why you get the big bucks. Let's see. Trump's pick to run CMS. I don't know what CMS is. It's a government bureaucracy that has three letters. It's not the CIA. It's not the FBI. It's the CMS. And Trump has picked fake Dr. Mehmet Oz And then for HHS, which is Health and Human Services, whatever those are, I don't want any of them, thank you. I'll take my human services from humans, not from a bureaucracy in Washington. But Donald Trump, instead of bulldozing the Department of Health and Human Services, which is what a real conservative who wanted to make America great again would do, instead, he appointed Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is skeptical of Ozempic, the GLP-1 inhibitors. So you've got Kennedy, who's skeptical. You've got Elon Musk, who's on half the drugs he talks about. And then you've got Mehmet Oz, who's a fake doctor, and he doesn't know. And so it's just embarrassing. I only bring this up. I don't have a solution, except I would say if you're fat, work out, eat less, get active, don't take a pill. That's my advice, okay? And I've been fat, okay? I've been fat and I've been not fat. And anyway, I've been really skinny and I've been fat. So I can relate. The pill is probably going to be bad for you long term. It'd be better for you to work out and eat right. And you don't like hearing that. And so if you hear that from me, you might not like me. And maybe that Elon Musk thinks, well, I want people to like me. Well, I don't really care if you like me or not. Elon cares. Why should he care? He's got $600 billion, but he's still obsessed with, because he's a people-pleasing, fake, phony fake on ketamine, and he's high. And I don't care how much money he has, and I don't care that he yeah, all right. That's from the Muskrat file. Let's call him the Rasputin file. I don't like Elon Musk. I don't trust the guy. So anyone who's that successful and has that much money and still can't recognize God is untrustworthy, in my opinion. All right, so let's go from there to the Wisdom of Fools file, where we check in with Google, and we check in with Google Quantum AI founder Harmut Nevin. Harmut Nevin. He says, well, he announced last Monday that Google's Willow AI, no, I'm sorry, Willow is not their AI. It is their quantum computing chip. He announced that the chip is so fast, and it's so mind-bogglingly fast, he says, that he is assuming that the chip is borrowing computational power from other universes. Uh-huh. And he says it seems to him legitimate to consider that quantum computations occur in many parallel universes in line with the idea that we live in a multiverse. That's right. We live in a multiverse. So this guy's probably making $500,000 a year working for Google. And he thinks that we live in a multiverse. All right. And things are gonna turn out fine with these kind of people running things. We're going to be fine. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Thank you for sticking with us. Hey, Harmut. What was his name? Was it Harmut? Harmut Nevin. Just wonder if his multiverse structure includes heaven and hell. Because that could be, I mean, you could kind of look at it that way, although not quite a multiverse. It's definitely other places other than just Earth and space and all of that. So is it possible your quantum computer chip is borrowing computing power from heaven? Or is it more likely, since you work for Google, that you're borrowing it from hell? All right, temporarily for sure. Okay. I'm going to guess that you just don't know what's going on with quantum physics, because nobody really knows what's going on with quantum physics. But there's something there, and I can assure you it's not a universe. And you don't even have to pay me $500,000 to straighten that out for you, Harmut. I'll give you that one for free, buddy. So that one's on me. All right. Meanwhile, we head over to BlackRock, So if the largest investment and money management firm in the world is called BlackRock, that just seems creepy to me. Why? Why is it called BlackRock? Is it because the people associated with are a bunch of satanic, demonic, evil, wicked people? Color me skeptical, but I'm just going to say, yeah, I think that's why. I think it's because they're evil. Okay, maybe. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but why do you call it BlackRock? Why don't you call it something like sunshine and rainbows, wealth and happiness and prosperity for everybody, Inc.?
That sounds gay.
Well, I guess, well, only because the queers took the rainbow. Otherwise, you could use the rainbow. It's very festive and happy. Yeah. I mean, before the faggots got a hold of it. All right, well, we'll take that one back. Don't you worry about that. But BlackRock just strikes me as, it's like the chicken place, Raising Cane. You couldn't have named a place Raising Cane in the 1950s. You'd have gone out of business. Everyone would have thought you were a Satanist. But the BlackRock. Okay, anyway, BlackRock has shocked some in the Bitcoin community because they put up a video explaining their understanding of Bitcoin. And in the video, they warn there's no guarantee that Bitcoin's $21 million supply cap won't be changed in the future. So I read this and I'm thinking, okay, for the first time in my life, I think I understand cryptocurrency. So the idea behind Bitcoin was that there's going to be a limited number of them, and the blockchain is going to make it impossible for anyone to cheat or to ever break the structure and create more bitcoins. And so it would have real value and nobody could cheat. And so now that I think I understand, let me just say that the idea that men created an electronic currency or any operation that cannot cheat or be cheated is simply not believable. I don't believe you. It's not believable, at least not by me. You have something that can't cheat or be cheated? I don't believe you. So we're at the trade show, and we're just trying to sell our wares, just trying to make a living. And this woman comes up, and she looks like... Who's the lady from Fleetwood Mac? The witch from Fleetwood Mac. She looks like the witch from Fleetwood Mac in a cowboy hat and a long jacket and the cowboy boots. What's that? She looks like Stevie Nicks, right? And she starts giving us the googly eyes, telling us how she's in crypto. And if we want to get out in, she said within 1 year you can put in and you can take out your money and then just play with their money. And it felt like she was casting a spell on us. It was really bizarre and creepy and eerie. And so my buddy, who's a salesman, he just looks over his glasses and he says, you know, you're trying to sell a salesman. She got a little bit offended and she walked away. Anyway, neither of us put our life savings in her cowboy hat. And she went on and cast spells all. But there's the thing about the trade show is... A trade show is all about psychologically manipulating someone and bringing them to the height of impulse or the height of fear of missing out. You psychologically manipulate and then you take advantage of them and you get them to take out the credit card, give you a lot of money. I've never been good at that because I hate psychology. I hate manipulating people. I hate being manipulated. And so I've never been the number one salesman. I never will be the number one salesman. Well, I have at times, but only because they hadn't hired other psychologically manipulating sharks yet. So I just never able to do that. But anyway, I did this trade show because last moment thing. And then I remembered why I don't do trade shows anymore, because it's really yucky, creepy. But let's get back to the blockchain. The sacred Bitcoin blockchain that cannot cheat or be cheated. I don't believe it. And only because I've been around long enough to know that you can't make it so people can't cheat and lie. You can't do that. What we need is an economy where people won't cheat. Not technology that claims to make it impossible to cheat. Yeah, they say they have a technology that makes it so people can't. Well, that's a lie. And this is why I think at best, crypto is a scam of ignorance for most of the people involved. I think most of the people involved in crypto are like pagans. I mean, they believe, but it's a false god. So unfortunately, but then I think there are people who know down deep that it's not true, that you can't create something that can't cheat or be cheated. And so we need people who won't. And there's two means, there's two mechanisms to make it so people won't cheat or lie or steal from each other. The first is to preach the gospel and have them get to know God and learn how to love each other. And then the second is the criminal justice system, so that if you do it, the punishment is painful and swift. And so, but creating a technology that supposedly can't cheat or be cheated, I don't think so, I'm sorry. Meanwhile, Lara Trump, who is, I think, related to Donald Trump in some way. I'm not sure who she is. She shares a last name with him for some reason. I know, and I believe she was the chairman of the Republican committee, some committee, and now she's not. But she says in a quote, this is from the Wrong Religion file. Lara Trump says, here's what she says about her relative, Donald. I don't know what she is. I apologize. She says about Donald Trump, this is a man who I believe knows he was made for this moment. I think that he believes this is a mandate from God. Uh-huh. She's unquote. That's Lara Trump on Donald Trump, who now I think it's her father-in-law. I think she's married to one of the Trump boys. I think. So he believes it's a mandate for God. That's what Lara thinks. Why does she think this? Because that's what he said to her. I've heard him say it. She says, quote, after coming within millimeters, again, of losing your life and being spared, you kind of look at things a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to say that Donald Trump and Michael Bloomberg are birds of a feather. And I'll just leave it at that. Meanwhile, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says he thinks there are too many abortions in the world. That's right. He said that allegedly in a conversation with Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, a Republican from Oklahoma, who had a conversation with RFK. And RFK told him, I think there are too many abortions in the world. RFK went on to say, he said, it's not that I don't value life. This is after saying that he's for killing people, unborn children. Some, just some. Not, I mean, he's not crazy about it. He's like, I'm not crazy about it. I think there's too many. But I'm pro-choice. It's not that I don't value life. I value life. I just, and that's where you should stop. When you say I value life, but, Bobby, you're in trouble, my friend. I would just stop right there and reevaluate your entire worldview. I value life, but I just look at it a little bit different in certain circumstances with what we've been through as a family. So I don't get that. Your uncle and your father get their brains blown out by assassins, and for some reason that gives you a pass on killing innocent kids? Anyway, the article from LifeSite News goes on to say, Robert Kennedy Jr. has held a variety of positions on abortion. And then you're like, well, wait a second. How can you hold a variety of positions? I mean, huh? How is that? You're either for it or against it. Or maybe what they mean is, he's against it generally. Unless there's a specific child that he needs to kill, in which case he'd like to reserve the right to kill that one. But generally he's against it and he thinks there's too many. And then if you'll just give him the one that he might need, then he's happy to criticize the killing of some other kids if those dead babies are politically useful to him. So his position is just like Donald J. Trump's position. And the Make America Great Communities position. And National Right to Life Committee's position. They're happy to criticize others and they're who they don't like politically. And then for their political allies, they're willing to give them one or two. Just how many do you need? Just the ones you might need. We'll give you those. And then they all act like they're pro-life. At least Robert F. Kennedy Jr. At least he's honest enough to say he's not pro-life. That's about all you can say about him. Other than that, he's going straight to hell with jet rockets. And he's also deceiving and manipulating and lying to lots of people, and which is despicable. And that takes us to the culture of death file. Mediaite has the headline, giant splashed headline, stunning poll. Young Americans think CEO assassination was acceptable. That's the headline from Mediaite.com. And then the story opens a staggering poll from Emerson College. And they go on how 18 to 29 years olds in the poll, almost half of them believe that the murder of the healthcare CEO, Mr. Thompson, was acceptable. Almost half of the kids from 18 to 29 think it was acceptable. And then 20% profess to be neutral on the question, which means they think it's acceptable. You can't be neutral when somebody gets shot from behind. You can't say, well, I have no opinion. That's not allowed. That means you're good with it. So that means 60% of the younger generation think that sneaking up behind a guy and shooting him in the head because you disagree with him is acceptable. And then Mediaite pretends that this is stunning and staggering and shocking, but it shouldn't be. This is a generation that has been groomed for the next Holocaust. Yeah, that's, they've been groomed for it. They've been prepared for it. And here they're looking, you know, the killer in this case, the killer is on video murdering the guy. And so he should be on trial already. And then upon conviction, he should be put to death publicly and painfully, and then watch the numbers in this poll change. So that's the first way to reach the kids who have been groomed to carry out the next Holocaust. And they need to be reached. Because we want to prevent the next Holocaust, I assume, right? Right? You ask the Department of Energy and all the other alphabet agencies and the federal government and the communist, criminally insane sex cult that seized the government. And right? We want to prevent the next Holocaust, right? Crickets you hear. Anyway, the kids need to be reached. So this is one opportunity to reach them by executing this bastard painfully and publicly and swiftly. And then the kids need to hear the gospel. That's what they need. They need to learn how to love each other. Because if they don't learn how to love each other, and 60% of them think that killing someone is an option when you're upset with them or you disagree with them, that is going to end very badly in the not-too-distant future. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for tuning in. Another thing we could do to reach the kids is to end all the alphabet agencies in the government, stop the psycho-communist governments, and stop saturating the culture and the education bureaucracy with psycho-babble and lies and deceptions and psychological manipulations. All of that. And that brings us to the culture of death file. The killer at the Abundant Life Christian School in the latest school shooting. This one at a private Christian school. A girl shoots up a private Christian school. It's like unthinkable, right? But this is the second one. Maybe the third one? Anyway, who can count? 15-year-old girl killed two people, wounded six others at Abundant Life Christian School in... Where was this? Madison? Was this Madison, Wisconsin? Yeah. the post-millennial is reporting that the killer had a tumultuous childhood filled with multiple divorces of her parents as well as long bouts of psychotherapy. The killer's parents married around 2 years after she was born. The mother had been married and divorced and had a daughter with a different guy who she never married. Then the killer's parents divorced 3 years after they got married, so she would have been about five. That was 2014. Then in 2017, they remarried, but then they divorced again in 2020. At that point, the killer would spend 2 days with her father and then 2 days with her mother and then go back to her father for 3 days. And then the schedule would reverse unless, I don't know, they would like toss some dice or something or just shocking. Then the couple remarried again for a third time, got divorced again in 2021. And when they were in the divorce proceedings, the judge admonished them against getting married again. It's like the judge was like, I'm sick of doing this. You could keep getting married, divorced. They were admonished concerning remarriage by the judge.
Wow.
And by this point, the killer, this 15-year-old girl, at this point, she's what? Let's see. I don't know. 10, 12 years old. She's been in psychotherapy for most of her young life. And the therapy was supposed to help guide decisions about which parents she would spend weekends with. How can you even wrap your mind around that as a 12-year-old? I'm in psychotherapy to help me figure out if I want to be with mom or dad. A 12-year-old wants to be with mom and dad. And whatever a psychotherapist does to help her deal with the fact that she can't be with mom and dad, it's not good. The parents are said to be on cordial terms. And they report a generally positive co-parenting relationship. So they thought everything was fine. Anyway, and the 15-year-old girl, she killed herself too. Just so horrible. Just horrible. Meanwhile, that takes us to the death penalty file. Here's the headline from Breitbart. Oklahoma child killer executed despite petition for clemency. Now, this child killer, he was not executed for abortion. That's legal in Oklahoma. In fact, abortion is legal in Oklahoma despite the 2022 abortion ban that was enacted there by Republicans. That's right. The Republicans, you go check the news. You'll read about the abortion ban in Oklahoma. And you might think it's weird that how could abortion still be legal in Oklahoma if there's an abortion ban? Well, they only banned a couple or three or maybe, you know. The thing is, they wanted to reserve the right in case they needed it. But they also wanted to bamboozle gullible evangelicals while leaving the gullible evangelicals the option to kill a kid if they need to. So what MAGA means is everyone who needs to kill a kid still can, but we're all pro-life. And we're going to get rich in crypto. All right. Let's see. The Oklahoma child killer who was executed, Kevin Ray Underwood. We only announce the name of the killer when they're killed. He was put to death by lethal injection on his birthday in 2024 for a murder he committed in 2006 against little Jamie Rose Bolin. Why do they call him a child killer? Is because she was only 12. He told the police that he nearly beheaded the girl in his bathtub before abandoning his plan to eat her. What? Just a maniac. Just a complete maniac. And there was a petition to stop his execution.
Wow.
Organized by Death Penalty Action. No doubt this is a Soros-funded operation. death penalty action. They argued, quote, state-sanctioned murder of someone like Kevin, a mentally ill individual on the autism spectrum, is irreversible and takes us further away from what we want most, a fair, effective, and rehabilitative justice system. That, unquote, that's a quote from Death Penalty Action, hyperventilating over. Anyway, what they don't realize over at Death Penalty Action, so they call it state-sanctioned murder, which is ludicrous. Murder, by definition, you're denied legal process. You're denied due process, by definition. So this is not murder. It's also not irreversible. The death of someone is not irreversible for all you heathen pagan scum at Death Penalty Action. It's not irreversible. In fact, I hope somebody was working with this maniac, Kevin Ray Underwood. So even God could save even this guy. Decapitates a 12-year-old. God could even save this guy. Hopefully somebody got to him. Yeah, so death is reversible, you ignorant heathens. And we don't want a justice system. We don't, whatever you described it as, that's not what we want. You know what we want? We want a justice system that's just. Not all the psychobabble hogwash that you vomit out on behalf of murderers. Murderers who need, they don't need to hear about their autism spectrum position and their mental illness. That's what they not what they need to hear from you lawyers ginning up a living off the murderer's soul. That's not what the murderer needs to hear about, is the fear of God. And then he needs to hear that he's very soon he's going to meet God, and that his death is going to be painful. He's going to be dispatched to God with a severe amount of pain before he meets God. That's what he needs to hear. Because then his death could be reversible. But not with you lawyers. You're like vultures. You're like vultures circling the souls of men. Despicable. Speaking of despicable vultures, we go to the Culture of Death file, where John Ramsey claims he has received a letter from a woman claiming that her ex-husband killed JonBenet Ramsey. Uh-huh. Now, there's no word yet if handwriting experts have been able to examine the letter from this woman to find out if Patsy wrote this one, too, in addition to the wow, ransom note that she wrote the night that they killed JonBenet. Whichever one did. I'm not sure which one of them killed her.
Why this story only comes around this time of year?
Uh-huh. Yeah, right? Oh, well, it's Christmas time. That's when they found. Yeah.
It's always this time.
Okay. And then so we have an interview. We have a quote from a defense attorney who has no connection to the JonBenet Ramsey case and barely has a connection with reality. And here's what she says. She says, quote, whether that was intentional or not, the ransom note has caused a lot of suspicion around the parents, especially the mother, because, you know, of the amount of the ransom that matched a certain amount of money that, like, only she would have known about. Or, I mean, her and John would have only known about that specific amount of money. So that looked real strange. And then all the time it must have taken to write the letter and then rewrite the letter, that looked kind of suspicious. And then the fact that it was written on the mother's stationery, that was... that caused, I mean, whether it was intentional or not, the note caused a lot of suspicion. And then there was the fact that the handwriting experts at the time said it could have been written by a female. And then she leaves out that they said it could have been written by her, which we all of us remember that if we were alive. However, says defense attorney Lexi Ridgett, however, the ransom note is not the most important piece of evidence. The DNA is the most important piece. This shows that she was hired by John Ramsey. The fact that she says, the ransom note, don't look at the ransom note. Look at the DNA, the DNA. Says delusional defense attorney Lexi, hired by John Ramsey. John Ramsey announcing that this woman claims her ex-husband killed. He wants the police to look into that because, well, that'll draw attention away from that. That pesky ransom note. But John Ramsey mostly wants that important DNA investigated. That's what he really wants. He says he remains optimistic that the new Boulder police can solve the case. And now listen, we have a quote from John Ramsey. He says, quote, "Solving the case is not going to change my life at this point. I just turned 81. But it will change my children's lives, my grandchildren's lives. They need to have this cloud removed, clarified, and an answer. That's why we're pushing so hard to get an answer," unquote. All right, now, I'm not a psychoanalyst, okay? I'm not a psychologist. I'm just a guy who's been on the planet for a little while and paying attention. So how could you say, after your daughter is brutally murdered in your house and your entire life is turned upside down for the rest of your life, how could you possibly say solving the case is not going to change my life at this point? That just doesn't ring true. And then, what are you pushing for, John? You're pushing to get an answer? Okay, so first of all, how could you say it won't change your life? Is it because you already know you're guilty? And even if the bodily fluids and the DNA that you planted implicate someone else someday, it's not really going to change your life because you already know, don't you, John? I'm just speculating. And then finally, John, you're pushing to get an answer? You're not pushing to catch the killer? That just seems a bit too cold and academic, Mr. Ramsey. I don't believe you. And then we'll just leave it at that. All right, that's from the Culture of Death file. Now, speaking of the culture, let's go to a story on social media here. You know they have content moderators at the social media platforms like Facebook? That's people who have to look at the content and decide if it's too gross, horrible, criminal. You know, or if it promotes godliness. They take that down. But also the gross and the horrible and the... Anyway, 140 Facebook content moderators have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder caused by exposure to graphic social media content. They've filed a lawsuit. They say that forcing people to moderate this content is beyond, quote, what normal humans can mentally stand. Wow. That's cool. Yeah. I'm sure it is, right? Can you imagine what people post? The stuff that gets taken down because it's just too gross. Can you imagine how foul it must be? And then your job, 8 to 10 hours a day, is to go and look at that and decide if it's too creepy. Anyway, you read the article, there's people who literally would throw up, run out of the room screaming. They saw things that they could never unsee. And then the author of the article over at notthebee.com says, the hope, obviously, is to train AI to do the job. Unquote. So, no. Whoever you are, the urinalist at Not The Bee, the hope is not that we can train AI to do this job. The hope is that criminal law will be enforced to make perverts afraid of posting their perversion online so that nobody has to moderate any of this. But, of course, that's not going to happen until Kingdom Come. And by the way, in Kingdom Come, there's a reason that Jesus rules with a rod of iron. And it's because of creepy perverts who want to put stuff like this. He just reaches over with that rod of iron and he goes smack like a bug. And nobody has to moderate anything because his justice will be perfect. That's probably the only hope we have. Although if the justice system now would enforce the law in a legitimate fashion, perverts would be terrified to put anything up for fear that they would be put on trial and then executed upon conviction. And before we execute him, we could preach him the gospel. That's a much better model than relying on AI or sentencing some poor guy making $14 an hour to have to watch this stuff. All right, so I guess, is that all we've got? Oh, the Pentagon, apparently this is from the Forever War file. Washington Examiner says the U.S. military has finally admitted they have twice as many troops as they claimed in Syria. That's right. Seems there was a troop surge that occurred before Assad fell. And folks at the Pentagon are saying, look, well, we were worried that Assad was going to fall. We don't want ISIS back. And so, yeah, we've put in another, we got about 2,000 troops there. Anyway, I say that's too few. If ISIS is there, I want 30,000 troops there. And I want to eradicate them from the face of the planet. I mean, if you're going to do it right. There's a song there somewhere. So anyway, when I heard this, I thought, hey, this is an indication that maybe someone in the defense and intelligence community, instead of spying on religious organizations and conservatives, maybe some of them are actually paying attention to what's going on in the world and that Assad was going to fall and they figured he was on the brink. We better get some troops in there. Maybe someone's paying attention. Maybe there's some hope after all, is what I thought when I read that story. Because if I'm in defense and intelligence and I see that Assad's on shaky ground, I'm sending some troops in. Yeah. All right. And you might get mad about it and you might get mad about forever war, but here we are. All right. I don't want to insult or make anybody mad. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.